Today's episode of the Hash Rate Podcast is brought to you by Luxor Technology, North America's largest mining pool. Luxor's goal is to operate enterprise-class mining pools with professionalism and an intense customer focus. They provide a top-notch user experience and have a great selection of pools for you to mine to, from a variety of notable altcoins to Big Daddy Bitcoin, for which they launched their mining pool in October, so be sure to go and check them out. We are incredibly grateful that Luxor has chosen to sponsor this show going into 2020. We would love it if you, as listeners, would support the show by supporting them. You can find them online at luxor.tech and give them a follow on Twitter at Luxor Tech Team. Hey everyone, thanks for tuning into the Hash Rate Podcast, the best crypto mining podcast in the history of the world. Today's episode is a great one. JP Barrick from Mining Store joins us again. JP was one of our first guests when the podcast launched, and we are so appreciative that he made the time to come back on and speak with me and Mean Hash on this episode. Obviously, we're discussing where he thinks Bitcoin is going to go overall, considering that he has a ton of experience in Bitcoin mining. He's also very well attuned to the institutional side of mining and has a lot of insight in that regard. So it was great to get to pick his brain and talk about where he feels the market is going overall. It's been a crazy couple of weeks. Price action has been absolutely nuts. A lot of miners now are trying to figure out what their next move is. A lot of traders are trying to figure out where is the price of Bitcoin going to go. Hopefully everyone is tuning into the Hashrate podcast. Over the past couple of weeks, we've featured some guests that have given really valuable insights. And if you've been paying close attention, some of the things that have been occurring in the market and in the world, you have been able to hear about prior to their occurrence. So hopefully you guys have taken some value from the podcast. We appreciate you guys for continuing to tune into the show. We would love it if you would take a moment, leave us a rating and review on your preferred listening platform, specifically on Stitcher and iTunes, and share this podcast with a friend. We'd really appreciate that as well. So,
and as always, today's episode of the Hashrate Podcast is presented to you by Hashrate OS. Hashrate OS is a Linux-based operating system designed to help you increase the efficiency of your mining machines and maximize your overall profitability. Now with ASIC and GPU support, Hashrate OS provides the best experience in crypto mining, allowing you to manage your facility fully from any mobile device and take complete control of your mining operations. Hashrate OS is mining as it should be. Be sure to head over and check out the Hashrate operating system at os.hashrate.com. Again, that's os.hashr8.com. All right, without further ado, on to the show.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning into the Hashrate Podcast. I am the Bitcoin Broski here today with Mean Hash, and we have a special guest back on the Hashrate Podcast. This gentleman was actually one of our first guests way back when. He is one of the most well-known miners in crypto. Started off very young, has advised some amazing projects, and then, of course, now he is the founder and CEO of Mining Store, and he's got a lot that's going on. So we're excited to have back on the show JP Barrick. JP, welcome, man.
Thanks, guys. Nice to be chatting, jumping on the show again.
Yeah, it's good to have you back. I think the last time that we talked, you were down in Houston, and now you've got some big things going on in Iowa. And of course, it's been a crazy time in between then and now in Bitcoin and crypto in the world. So we've got quite a bit to talk about. Mean Hash, how's everything going with you, man?
The world has been so busy for me lately.
Yeah, I was telling JP a little bit before the show, but I had a transatlantic flight the day before Trump stopped all travel from Europe back into the United States. My flight was packed, all of my flights. So I had three flights that day. They were all slammed. No one was wearing masks. No one seemed to care about the coronavirus, except for me. I was masked up, wiping everything down with wet wipes. It was a scene, but self-quarantine now for the next couple of weeks in Riga. It's going to be very interesting. I don't know. It seems like you're just, you know, every time you turn on the news, there's nothing good that anyone's saying, right? It's just the world is burning down around us, it seems. But hey, we keep it moving. So JP, let's jump right into it, man. Like I said, last time that we talked, you were down in Houston. Now you guys are in Iowa. What are you guys doing out there?
Yeah, so we're working with the local utility here in Iowa. Kind of came to them and said, hey, we can, you know, use a bunch of load 24/7. And when you need us to shut off during the peak load hours, we're happy to curtail power usage. And we're able to work out an arrangement with them where they have about five different substations out here where they have power already stepped down that they're currently not using. And so we put up a Bitcave building, which can hold about 6.6 megawatts of miners, and deployed that right next to the substation here in Iowa. And we have a couple more substations we're looking at building out on over the next 8 to 9 months.
Sir, what's a Bitcave?
just a big building with almost like an airplane hangar, and it goes up in about 2 weeks, so it's very quick to deploy. And then we filled out the inside with the shelving and the fans and all the vents and stuff. Basically, it's just a modular building that we can quickly deploy. That's one of the things that I highlighted last time was, you know, just time to deploy a megawatt and trying to always reduce the time and the cost it takes, you know, you as a mining company or as a hosting company to deploy extra infrastructure.
So with the model that you guys have built there now, some of it's self-mining, some of it's co-location. What are the benefits of each model?
Well, obviously with self-mining, you capture all of the price increase and all the potential rewards from when Bitcoin goes up. That is really the benefits of self-mining. When it comes to co-location, it's a little bit more bankable. So you have these contracts with customers, which can be 2 or 3 years long, and you're able to guarantee that steady flow of cash from what you're paying for power versus what you're charging that customer with the service, you know, you're providing. The reason why co-location, I think, makes some sense is because you want to diversify your risk, and it does take a lot of capital to deploy, you know, a full facility with your own miners. So if you're able to diversify some of that risk, and like what we did here is about 50% mining for ourselves, and I would say about 50% mining for other customers. So it's a nice split. And for future sites, you know, the co-location business, it seems to be almost like pause. Like most people in the co-location business aren't throwing in lots of new miners. It's a lot of big farms that are deploying a lot of hash rate right now. But usually co-location providers, I mean, co-location guys want their machines up and running, you know, 2 to 3 weeks from now. So you have to be able to kind of balance the space that you have for your own machines and the space for, you know, customer machines, and understand that that infrastructure, you know, cost and time, you really have to take that on yourself and, you know, take that burden of the capital. So that's kind of what we've decided is like, let's do 50-50 split for this first site. Future sites, it's most likely just going to be all self-mining because we're starting to move into a different direction of capital partners and energy partners that we're working with.
So when we were at Mining Disrupt last year, it seemed like there were a ton of people that were trying to sell co-location space. Being that Bitcoin had a crazy run up last year, hash rates continue to increase. And then, you know, this year has been a little bit nuts to say the least. How is co-location demand currently?
I would say you're seeing maybe 3 or 4 clients a week that want something for like, you know, 10, 15, 20 machines. So very small customers there. And then you have some bigger players in the space that maybe have 10, 20 or 30 megawatts already deployed or are deploying that capacity over the next 3 months. Those guys are always looking for space, but, you know, they're really asking for a lot. As a co-location provider, you know, the rates, I think, are dropping very quickly. We're seeing hosting for containers close to 4 cents, almost all in. And that's if you bring your own infrastructure. And if you don't bring your own infrastructure, and you're a large client, kind of like 5.5, 5 cents. That's kind of where the market is right now. Of course, if the price picks up and grinding becomes more profitable, you know, we expect those co-location numbers to increase, you know, to 7, 8 cents. But it really, as you mentioned, there was a lot of supply built out, and the demand, I don't think, came in to fill it here in the United States, at least.
You know, for someone who may not know the difference, can you walk through cloud mining versus co-locating and how you decipher between the two? I know there's a clear distinction, but I think that there's often confusion because with one, you're buying contract, with one, there's actual hardware. But how are you looking at both of those separately?
Yeah, so cloud mining, as you mentioned, you don't actually own the hardware. It's usually you pay for a year of the service upfront. And in my experience, usually you don't make any money, but you basically pay for the service upfront. All the machines are running in a data center somewhere. You don't necessarily know where they're going to be running. You don't know what machines are going to be running. And if you can choose your machine, then, you know, you're going to have an S17 mining for you. And they take that hash rate, they pool it all together, and then they kind of split it out into even chunks. And you get, usually you're always going to have that hash rate mining for your pool. So you have no variability on the machines going down or if your machine gets broken. But like I say, you don't actually own that asset. When it comes to co-location, our co-location customers own their mining rigs and they're theirs. And so we can't just say, oh, your contract's done, you know, congrats, the year's over. No, it's now our machine. So those are, I think, the two biggest differences between cloud mining and co-location.
Right now, with everything that's going on, what are your thoughts as we move towards the halving in what, like 60 days? How are you guys planning for it?
Yeah, so we, you know, the halving, we were running numbers yesterday on the S9s and trying to figure out, okay, you know, what price are they good to run at? And we were seeing kind of like $5,000, $6,000 Bitcoin with some undervolting and underclocking. You're able to keep these machines running at a low, you know, kind of like 4 cent power rate. And it's kind of scary because we saw this, you know, we were at $10,000 Bitcoin before the coronavirus hit the markets. And then, you know, the past week has been just crazy from bonds, stocks, treasuries, everything, just kind of people pulling out liquidity and getting into cash. So with the halving, it's kind of like we had a halving right now, like this week with the price dropping, but now we're going to have another halving in 60 days for Bitcoin. It will be a bloodbath. It'll be very interesting. I don't think the price of Bitcoin is necessarily going to recover to $10,000 in the next 60 days. I mean, of course it could go on a run up, just knowing, you know, crypto can move very quickly. But if it doesn't, we're going to be, you know, in a tough position as any miner who has S9s or any machine with 80 watts of terahash running on Bitcoin is going to have some serious problems keeping them running and deciding, okay, one, do I clear out my space for new machines coming from China, which have been delayed for the past month from most suppliers just because of the coronavirus? Or do I want to hold these S9s, maybe turn them off and run them, in 120 days when the price goes back up? So we'll see. I think it's going to be a lot of inventory management, and we'll see a lot of used machines being shipped to South America and other locations where power is very, very, very cheap.
Now, once we get past the halving, where do you estimate that the highest tier power price is going to be? You think it's going to be that 4 or 5 cents area all in?
For colocation, I think we see that when the price spikes in Bitcoin, which I say is usually 600 to 500 days after the halving, we see artificial demand in the mining equipment. So many people are interested, and there's not enough supply of miners. There's not enough supply of colocation facilities. Back in 2017, we saw data centers looking to host miners. Actually, know a customer who deployed 500 S9s, and they did three of them per 42U rack shelf. So they had three miners sitting on one shelf per 42U rack, and it was like, wow, these data centers have no idea how to run S9s. They're just so inefficient, so much space. They're paying, 7.5 cents all in to run them. I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see a similar thing in 2021, where the price of colocation gets up to that 10, 11 cents. And sadly, new people coming into the industry are going to sign contracts that are going to basically make them unprofitable in 3 or 4 months after buying that equipment. And then they have to default on it, and it kind of becomes the colocation provider's equipment at that point, at least how most contracts are written in the space.
The halving is a variable that I think, especially with this recent price dip, a lot of people are underestimating the impact that it's going to have. And we had talked about a significant drop in the hash rate and probably the capitulation of a large percentage of miners who had kind of FOMO'd into their equipment, just looking to cash in quick before the halving. Now that this price correction has occurred, I do think we're going to see a lot of miners fall by the wayside, which obviously is going to attract more miners because of the difficulty adjustments. But what are you seeing right now? Are people still deploying capital to get miners out, or at this point, are we in more of a wait and see period?
Well, I think there's a lot of people in a wait and see period. I mean, just the past week has been crazy when it comes to the market. So I think everyone's kind of trying to figure out, where do we go from here at $5,000 per Bitcoin? Got as low as $3,800, and are we able to support new miners after the halving? I know anything you're buying now has a pretty good watts per terahash ratio of 40 or 50 watts per terahash, so it's double the efficiency of an S9. But that doesn't mean you're now making money. That means you're now, okay, I get to break even after the halving. Which, when you're getting into investing, no one just wants to break even every month.
Right. Yeah, it's definitely not a good value proposition. And now you've got new machines coming on the market. Who knows when they'll ship with everything that's going on in China, but the S19s, the M30Ss, how are you viewing these versus the S17s, which are pretty damn new in their own right? How are you guys looking at this for the future? Do you think there's going to be as much of a demand for the S19s and the M30Ss as there already is for the S17?
Well, I think I was reading somewhere the S19s, are going to ship for a couple of months. It was more like a PR play, just trying to keep up with the race between what's miner.
Nice.
And yeah, that, they're not able to actually, they have a couple of them made enough to be able to promote it. Regarding the S17s, they are probably, in my opinion, one of the best, machines out there, much better than Avalon machines, which we have a couple thousand of them running and just have had multiple difficulties with them. But the newer miners are, let's say, much easier to maintain, and their power supplies are integrated, which helps a lot. And then in addition, you can overclock them a lot, which is nice because people are able to get, 80, 90, 100 terahashes out of these S17s.
Yep.
With different firmware. So I don't think the S19 is going to come and kick off the S17s, anytime soon. Obviously, Bitmain's always going to be trying to improve their hardware. It seems like now their hardware cycle is almost every 5-4 months, very quick. And it's just let's upgrade on the design we already have and almost not wait, like we did between the S9 and the S15, and kind of wait this long period of time. So it's interesting to see them change that development cycle and just be pushing products as fast as they can. I also think a lot of it has to do with maybe the chip production. I know it's reading over the past couple of months, some of the wafers that they're making, aren't as high in yield. So then when they make a chip, it's not able to get the 100 terahashes that they need. So they're doing a good job with throwing those into other models like the T17 and T17 Plus, and in order to maximize their chip production and their chip yield. But regarding the next 6 months, 9 months, 12 months, a year of where the hardware is going to go, I wouldn't be surprised if the S19, like I said, comes out in May or June and really starts hitting production then. And then by the end of the year, we have a new machine that Bitmain launches, just to, like I said, keep up with what's miner, which seems to be grabbing a significant market share. over the past just really 6 months with the WhatsMiner M20S. I've been deploying that. We almost added 100 petahashes since the last podcast, which is just crazy to think about how much hash rate has come online.
Yeah, that's nuts. And the 20Ss have done crazy good. And the feedback on them has been amazing. I think MicroBT was definitely the breakout hardware star of 2019. I think they sold like 500,000 units. And I mean, their reputation seems to be good. So I would assume they'll continue to take some market share from Bitmain as long as the quality of the machines they're putting out is on point. What do you think of the kind of the upstarts, if you will? I know SBI is looking to get into the hardware game. Also, Layer 1 has mentioned that they were going to release an ASIC, although I think that might be more of a conceptual thing right now and less something that's on the horizon. What have you seen from non-Chinese hardware manufacturers?
So I'm kind of like beginning of this year, met up with a couple different groups from the United States that are working on their own chips and, you know, saw their factories, saw their tours. I did a couple tours and kind of saw their, met their team. It's really just hard to keep up with not being in China and having those relationships with the fab. And then one of the biggest things we're seeing is we're actually being able to finance large amounts of machines has been a struggle for almost all of these manufacturers. That's why, in my opinion, Canon went and did an IPO was, you know, they needed capital, they needed credit to build inventory. One of the things we're seeing SBI do and Bitmain is really just packing their mining facilities with equipment. So as fast as they can make it, they're trying to, one thing I heard was, I don't know if this is true, but one of our marketing guys, Zach Safran, was in Istanbul for one of the Bitcoin conferences over there. And he was talking to some people and found out that basically Bitmain has been putting out PR saying that, you know, Bitcoin mining is unprofitable. These machines are unprofitable. Like these Ethereum miners are no longer going to work on Ethereum Cash because of the DAG size, but they'll still work on Ethereum. So kind of spreading some false rumors and trying to some misinformation to keep people from actually not buying equipment so that they can ship it over to Rochdale, Texas, and run it in their new mining facility. And then my thesis is that, you know, as the price shoots up in a couple hundred days, they'll be able to have that liquidity, that mining liquidity in a warehouse running, making the money, and then sell it as, you know, lightly used or even, you know, new, knowing Bitmain. There's a lot of, you know, a lot of companies like, and, you know, SBI is doing that as well, really trying to build up as much mine liquidity as possible and then be able to sell it into this spike. And that's where as a miner, you'll be able to make your 2 to 3x, 4x return. It's not on the daily working through mining where you're going to make your 10 or 20 or 30% IRR, depending on your power rate. But it's on that 3 to 4x jump, which you only have about 6 months to make that capital. And you have to be able to sell all this equipment into the market. So we're seeing companies now are more prepared for that and kind of preparing for this liquidity crisis that we've had in the past halvings and trying to be able to have the machines available for customers.
When you mentioned, you know, trying to slam equipment into facilities, do you see like submersive cooling taking off because of that? Because you can fit so many more devices in a smaller square footage, or have you looked into that at all?
Yeah. So the immersion infrastructure game, we've looked in a lot and it is interesting. It can reduce maintenance. We're not seeing many maintenance issues with these newer machines though. You know, they're really well built. They're also still new. The one thing with immersion is just trying to understand the CapEx play and really, you know, the big kind of pitch was, okay, you know, immersion cooling is going to let you overclock this by way more. And then we realized, wait, to overclock these machines, you just need a bigger power supply. You just need to push more power through the chips. And that's how we're able to get higher hash rate. And these chips are actually fairly durable and you're able to overclock them. And you don't really need that immersion technology yet, at least in my opinion. I think we're still a couple years early on mass immersion deployments. There are some groups that are working on them, you know, at the 20, 30, 40, up to 100 megawatt scale. But these are, you know, massive projects with big private equity groups that have the capital in place. And some of them have other reasons to install immersion other than just using traditional air cooling. Usually noise regulation is the biggest issue we've seen.
Now, when you mentioned people preparing for the lack of liquidity that we've seen before, don't you think there's going to be a ton of machines that are available if miners start to capitulate after the halving that are going to go at a pretty steep discount?
Definitely after the halving. What I was talking more about was, you know, Bitcoin's all-time high in, you know, 600 days or
I gotcha.
Whatever that happens to be. The halving, I mean, it's already causing wreckage in the S9 market, but really the resale market there is, it's almost kind of secondary because most of these guys, I mean, you have a couple thousand S9s, they've been running them for maybe 2, 3, 4 years, maybe they bought them a year and a half ago. It doesn't really make much sense to go, you know, sell them and have to deal with the claims and shipping them and all this crap for just, you know, 30 to 25 bucks a machine at the end of the day.
Yeah, they should just point them all at BSV and 1% attack it. And no, I'm just kidding. Like I said, the halving is a crazy variable. All right. So all of that aside, what are some of the trends that you're seeing that maybe I haven't, you know, asked questions about right now?
Yeah, so the biggest trend, you know, I've been seeing over the past couple of months is really the conversation with energy companies. We've talked to energy companies all over the globe this past year and have really learned a lot about what their thoughts are on Bitcoin mining and kind of where they are in the industry. I would say right now, most of these guys are still very concerned with Bitcoin's price. And it was funny when it was $3,000, you know, we were knocking people's doors and they were like, oh, if you're dealing with Bitcoin, we don't want to talk about it. But then when it kind of jumped to 10K, I think the conversation changed a little bit where it's like, oh, this asset isn't dead. This thing isn't just going to die. It's going to continue to grow. It's going to continue to increase in value. We're seeing that those energy companies are still not, let's say, they're interested in selling their power because oil has crashed. Natural gas prices are the lowest they've ever been. And they're interested in offloading hundreds of megawatts of power. But the problem is there's, what we've seen is that there's very few energy companies that are interested in saying, okay, yes, we can scale up. You know, let's do 20, 30, 40 megs to start and then go to 150. They want you to take 150 day one before you turn anything on. Because what they're usually doing is turning on additional capacity at their plant to generate these Bitcoins. So overall, the energy markets are interested in selling power to Bitcoin miners. And I think that trend will pick up. That's why I think the colocation markets will continue to get squeezed. The power prices are going to continue to drop for miners, especially here in the US, just as the, you know, the actual markets for these commodities continues to drop, continues to get lower, and they need a place to sell power. Over the next, maybe I would say, in the next 4 years, maybe when Bitcoin hits that all-time high, energy companies are going to, I think, wake up and be like, why aren't we Bitcoin mining? And what is it, you know, how do we get in the game? How do we start doing this? And I think there's going to be a huge opportunity for, you know, companies and people to service these energy companies over the next, as mentioned, the next like basically 4 years, where they'll want machines that have the certifications. They'll want containers or buildings that fit the requirements they need to run directly next to their turbines or to their power plants. So we'll see a kind of, I think, a lot of maturity in the space and a lot of new companies come out to kind of fill the void of where you have, I would say, infrastructure built for Bitcoin miners and then infrastructure built for energy companies, because they're really two different standards that, you know, are needed.
So, I mean, let's dig into that a little bit more. So how do the standards differ one to the other?
Really, it just comes down to compliance, right? So when you're selling to a Bitcoin miner, you're convincing maybe one, two, or three people at most on, you know, going with your infrastructure solution, deploying your infrastructure, or they're going to make their own. But when you go to an energy company, we're in talks with some large oil and gas companies that you go to the gas station, you're like, wow, that's, you know, these guys are right now selling gas and they draw this oil all over the world, but why aren't they Bitcoin mining? And they're starting to look at it. And there's a couple of proposals that we're still in talks with today that would be large deployments of, let's say, you know, they're starting off with like 15, 30, 45 megawatts to get kind of into this space. But the compliance and the due diligence required to deploy these facilities at, let's say, stranded gas or at a cogen facility, they don't want your stuff to catch on fire. They don't want your stuff to blow up. And they're scared. It's a new space. Like I said, the reputation isn't there. So these ISO requirements, the UL certification, explosive testing, all these different things that miners just wouldn't go and do. Like, a mining company is not going to spend $1 million to explosive test their container unless they're specifically trying to sell it, you know, to energy companies.
Yeah, that makes sense. So, I mean, where are you guys at with that? Have you guys done explosive testing?
We have not done explosive testing yet.
That sounds like a good time, not going to lie.
I mean, it does. It sounds like a fun time blowing up your containers and after all the work and seeing what happens. That sounds like a great YouTube video. I think right now we've been able to kind of work with the energy companies to help kind of suppress some of their fears and also just distancing ourselves from them. So not being directly on site, but saying, hey, we're going to set up 200 feet that way. It's cheaper than, you know, doing the whole explosive testing because we're far enough away from the power plant, the wellhead, or whatever it happens to be that you're running on, whatever your energy source is.
That makes sense. Well, you know, JP, you are a miner yourself. You are obviously servicing other clients. You know, from the software side, we've seen a lot of new service providers come into the ASIC mining space. As a miner, when you're working with like a pool or a software company, what have your experiences been?
On the pool side, I mean, there's lots and lots of pools out there. Some of them that we use personally, we've used Slush Pool before, and we still use them just because they're, you know, they've been around for so long. On the management software side, we're seeing a lot of software come up, but I'm still not seeing software that's like, wow, this is amazing. Like, everyone needs to use this. I know some guys, some people that are working on some really good software that we've been beta testers with and are on with their software. And so it's still, I think it's still young. I think it's good that there's a lot of people now competing in the space, and hopefully it drives down some of the fees. You know, the hard thing about Bitcoin mining software is most people are like, okay, I'm going to build this piece of software, charge you 2-3% fee on using it, and that's how I'm going to make my money. I think that's good for a lot of like consolidating a lot of small farms or medium-sized farms. But once you get to the bigger size farms, it makes much more sense for them to build their own custom piece of software to save that 2.5-3% that, you know, a small team of developers.
We're kind of seeing the same thing, right? There's a lot of products that are out there. It's the time to really ramp up when it comes to ASIC miners. You know, the GPU markets, and I know you started out as a GPU miner, GPU markets are constantly shifting. Have you moved away from GPU mining altogether? Are you 100% ASICs now?
Yep, we sold off our GPU facility and moved completely to ASICs just because we wanted to focus on something that was more scalable. And we thought the industry was moving to FPGAs, and I still believe that to be true. So I personally think the GPU market is slowly dying. Obviously, you can make a lot of money in the game if you have a large farm, and if you can mine different coins that, you know, don't have super high difficulty or don't have many people mining it, and you're kind of speculative mining. But I think the FPGAs, and I know people running some, and they're definitely much better than the GPUs, even though the biggest thing is just getting the bit streams set up properly.
Yep, definitely. Those are not cheap to get set up. So have you guys looked at diversifying into FPGAs, or is that just something you're kind of just watching from afar at this point?
It's something we're just kind of watching from afar. I've looked into it. The nice thing about it is they are, you know, financeable if you have another revenue stream. But we've just been kind of staying on the sideline, really focused on, you know, where is this industry going to shift to? I feel like every halving, there's a major shift in the mining market based on the players that are entering, based on what people are building, what people are doing, and kind of what they're focused on. So we're trying to figure out, where is this shift going to be, and where is the next opportunity to really grow and scale and potentially, you know, have like a 10x increase in size and profitability.
So dude, one of the questions that we hear all the time is, okay, so the halving is going to occur, and then the next halving is going to occur, and then the next halving is going to occur. And eventually, is there any money to still be made from just mining Bitcoin? So when someone approaches you with that question, 20 years from now, how do you see the infrastructure that you're putting in place make money?
Yeah, so I think when it comes to that question, I'd say it's still going to be mining Bitcoin in 20 years, in 30 years. And when I talk to just, you know, investors and capital partners, I say, you know, my goal isn't to mine as many Bitcoins as I can today. My goal is to mine, you know, the last Bitcoins that are coming out of the Bitcoin faucet per se. And the reason for this is because, in my opinion, I think the Bitcoin mining industry over the next, you know, 10 years is going to mature to a point where you have large banks playing and a very large scale. We already have them kind of mining themselves now very quietly, but banks and energy companies really deploying lots and lots of infrastructure, which for them to deploy, you know, hundreds of megawatts of power, really their cost comes down to their cost of capital. And since the energy markets don't have, and the energy companies don't have that tainted Bitcoin relationship, and they're not able to get banking or financing, they have a very easy time of getting capital. And so I think that the margins will be squeezed dramatically on Bitcoin mining. We'll always still have that 4 or 5 month time frame, and it could definitely shrink over time where the price of Bitcoin miners shoots up, price of hosting capacity shoots up. But I think instead it will be in a different way. We won't be selling miners in 10 years at scale. Of course, it'll still happen. But really what will happen is that this asset class will be securitized. You know, Bitcoin mining at its essence is a really good way of consuming electricity. And it kind of changes an assumption in the energy world, which is that I need to transport my power to sell it. And all these energy companies lived in this world of, okay, I build my power, I get my PPA, and that's how I finance my project. And we're seeing that there's massive amounts of capital that they're building out tons of energy that is really not needed. And they're all doing it just for the tax credits and just for these renewable credits. So regarding building out these facilities and kind of deploying at scale, I think we'll see a more integration with energy companies and miners. And if it's either them financing the whole project for, you know, we're talking 5-4% cost of capital on bonds or different vehicles. But in addition, I think that this whole market will become securitized, and that in 10 years, there'll be massive funds, massive players buying hash rate and trading it during that 3-4 month period, instead of actually buying and selling physical miners, simply because that's, you know, where every asset class goes is, you know, you securitize it, and then you're able to trade it much more efficiently and much more effectively. And Bitcoin mining is almost derivative of electricity. It lets you sell electricity everywhere in the world in a global marketplace. And I think that'll be very interesting to see what happens with the trading communities and with the large energy companies coming in the space over the next 10 years, and kind of understanding that you do have the opportunity to buy these machines and sell them maybe for 3 or 4x what you got them for. And if we can turn that into a securitized asset where we don't actually have to change hands of any physical servers, that provides huge opportunity for real capital to come in the space, start, I guess, investing and start playing around and start buying long-term hash rate contracts, which is almost like the iteration of your earlier question with cloud mining. I think cloud mining is going to start going away, and at least securitization of the hash rate and large institutional hash rate contracts will start to come into play.
Yeah, so you are literally the fifth person that has mentioned hash rate contracts to me in the last, I don't know, 10 days. And it's everyone from miners to service providers to fund managers. And I know a couple of companies are building those. And it's funny, you mentioned the cloud mining as a security, because I think that in the very near future, we're probably going to see a ruling come down where cloud mining contracts are considered a security. And because of that, it might kill that industry, because obviously cloud mining targets retail. There are, I'm sure, institutional investors that buy some cloud mining contracts. But I think the majority of the ads that I see are targeting the everyday consumer and not so much the bankers or the institutions that have capital to deploy. So with the hash rate contracts and those markets, how far away do you think we are, man? Do you think this is something we're going to see in the next year, 5 years, 10 years?
I would say, we'll probably see some live, like we already have some beta versions of stuff out and people are working on some really cool stuff, as you mentioned. And I think over the next year that'll continue to develop. I don't know if the markets will be ready after the halving, when the next Bitcoin price kind of spikes, which could be 2 years away. I think we might be looking at a 3 or 4 year play before this really is at scale. So like 2025, 2024, before, this is actively used and traded, is my thoughts.
Okay. All right. Well, that will definitely be an interesting development in the market. I'm just like envisioning BitMEX for hash rate contracts, death wicks that Arthur's controlling and just liquidating everyone.
Yeah.
Oh God.
It's going to get crazy, especially because, like I said, the nice thing about it is it provides for institutions is it's actually physical equipment. And depending on how you write your contract, they could potentially have, ownership of that equipment. And it would be very interesting to see how that plays out. And, compared to, just BitMEX 10X trading, the differences between trading physical hardware and just a digital coin.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, with those contracts, there's so many things that come into play too, right? I mean, you're taking into account, is it rainy season in China? Which new machines are, there's just so many things that can factor into those contracts. It would be a very cool thing to have available. And I think it would attract a lot of people who would not otherwise get involved in mining in any way, shape, or form. Backing out to my question of where do you see, the real potential for Bitcoin mining in the next 10, 20, 30 years? It's a phenomenal answer. So as we wrap up, coronavirus is apparently kicking the world's ass. Everyone is quarantined, self-quarantined, trying to stay in as much as possible. How are you letting this, or how is Mining Sword dealing with this from a business perspective? I know you're traveling in a couple of hours, so it doesn't seem like you're too afraid of it, but how is this impacting business?
Yeah, honestly, I've been tracking it since it kind of came out and really just been talking to people. I think I saw a great tweet that's like, the person that told you about Bitcoin in 2012 or 2013 is the same person who told you about coronavirus, when it was just coming out and you didn't do anything, when they told you about Bitcoin, and you're still not going to do anything when they tell you about coronavirus. It's because, I'm seeing just like people don't really care, at least in my age range. It seems like they're just like, if I get coronavirus, I'll be okay. I'm not going to die. But I think it's more important to, understand that you are going to infect potentially other people that then could, have circumstances where they would die because they run into medical issues because they're not as healthy as you. Regarding what we're doing as a company, really, we're, in pretty desolate areas where our mining sites are. I've been out here in Iowa for the past week and maybe you see 5 people a day. So not taking too many precautions, obviously making sure, our technicians are using, hand sanitizer, stuff like that, staying healthy and trying to limit travel. But regarding the coronavirus and the market effects, we were just having a conversation regarding what are these S9s going to make? And as I mentioned earlier, it's like $5,000, $6,000 price point. Where is the market going to be? And how long is coronavirus going to affect the economy? And how is that going to affect in Bitcoin price? I think that has a much more effect into the discussion than like necessarily the health ramifications for miners and for people getting sick at mining facilities.
So let's hear it, man. Up or down in the next couple of weeks? Where are we going with Bitcoin?
That's definitely a hard one. Where are we going? Over the next 2 weeks, we're going to trend up to $6,500. But that's about it. I don't know. And maybe 7,000, kind of sit around there for a while. I wouldn't expect it to jump back up to 9K anytime soon. Might be halving time by the time it gets to 9K.
Okay. All right. Well, just to be clear, any listeners out there, none of this is financial advice. We're not financial advisors. Just speculating. It's anyone's guess at this point. But JP, man, I really appreciate you making the time. I know today's a travel day for you and you took the time out of your schedule to be with us and chat on the podcast. And I really appreciate it, man.
No, I appreciate your guys' time and everything you're doing for the community. It's great to see you, grow over the past year, I guess, and just how big the podcast has gotten. Super excited to be on it again. Thanks again for having me.
It was our pleasure. We'll do it again anytime. And to the listeners out there, we appreciate you guys for continuing to tune in for the Hashrate podcast. We will talk to you guys again very soon. Thanks for tuning into the Hashrate Podcast. We appreciate your continued support. Please do us a favor and leave us a rating and review on your preferred listening platform. And head over to Twitter and give us a follow at Hashrate. That's at H4SHR8.